From St. Mary's to Sealands Grove, Latrobe to Erie, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, in an historic rebuke, the Pennsylvania legislature has voted to end Governor Tom Wolf's COVID-19 disaster declaration and strip him of his emergency powers. David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew are here to discuss what happens next. And Tom Wolf's participation in a protest march broke all of his own COVID-19 rules. I'll have a town hall commentary on why that has rendered his governorship irrelevant. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Early election results had Pittsburgh City Controller Michael Lamb leading in the race for the Democrat nomination for Attorney General. But as mail-in ballots in the Philadelphia region were counted, former Philadelphia Deputy Mayor Nina Ahmad surged into the lead. With over 99% of the ballots now counted, it is clear that Ahmad will be the Democrat Party's standard bearer in the November general election. She will face off against Dauphin County Controller Tim DeFore. Current Auditor General Eugene DePasquale was term limited. He won a close contest to be the Democratic nominee for the 10th Congressional District seat in the Harrisburg-York area. He will face incumbent Congressman Scott Perry in what will be one of the most hotly contested congressional elections in the nation. Public transit agencies, including the SEPTA system in southeastern Pennsylvania and the Port Authority Transit in Pittsburgh, have sustained a hard financial hit due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Business shutdown and stay-at-home orders resulted in a dramatic drop in ridership in April and May, and it could be months before it returns to normal. The Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh notes that PAT did not lay off any workers during the pandemic and has proposed a new fiscal year budget that begins July 1st, higher than that in effect for the current year. Further, state revenue could be affected by a drop in funds transferred from the Pennsylvania Turnpike, which has its own COVID-19-related financial problems, and declining sales tax revenue. The Allegheny Institute concludes public transit agencies have been costly and inefficient and now will be forced to address those problems. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf has used his emergency declaration during the coronavirus pandemic to wield unparalleled executive power over businesses and citizens in the Commonwealth. The legislature finally had enough. In an historic and bipartisan vote, they passed a resolution ending those powers. But that isn't the end of the story, as we will learn from our Capitol Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Matthew Briette from Commonwealth Partners. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Good to be here again. Thanks, David.
And my main man, Matt Briette, CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, great to see you.
Hey, good to see both of you.
Well, we've had a consequential couple of days in Harrisburg.
So the
lockdown by Governor Tom Wolf that he, even though we had come to the expiration of his emergency order, he had renewed the executive order for another 90 days, and that the legislature has there's an insurrection that a joint resolution of the General Assembly was passed ending the lockdown. Where do things go now?
Well, I think that maybe just a little bit of history for folks to understand that Governor Wolf issued his original emergency order on March 6. 90 days is what the law permits, which is actually on the outliers in the country. Most governors have a 30-day emergency declaration and then must get legislative approval to continue that. Not in Pennsylvania. We give 90 days. He issued a renewal of that on June 3rd. But a number of things I think have happened to where you've seen things turn in the legislature, right? We saw the House and Senate passing bills to reopen parts of the economy, things that were never closed in many states.
Right.
And then you started to see at first it was pretty partisan voting. And then you started to see some bleeding of Democrats joining with Republicans as time went by. There were, I think, a few tipping points here. The House had moved about 10 days before the Senate finally moved on this. And they did a partial repeal of the governor's emergency declaration. And that got a handful of Democrats joining with them. And then when Governor Wolf went out to protest the killing of George Floyd, he clearly violated the very limitations that he was placing on the people of Pennsylvania. Crowds no larger than 25, socially distancing. When he demonstrated that hypocrisy of engaging in behavior that he is sending out state police, licensing agencies, fining people for the very behavior that he engaged in. That is where I believe this really turned for the legislature, that resulted in a bipartisan, both in the House and in the Senate, vote to repeal this emergency declaration. So I think, here we are in day some 90 some odd days, 94 or so or more, I think it's grown weary on the people of Pennsylvania and clearly Democrats and Republicans enough to the point that they took very strong action. And I think unprecedented. We haven't seen this. We're in uncharted waters.
Yes.
Right now.
Yeah. Such a thing has never been necessary before.
Correct.
And Rebecca, I mean, I would say that, obviously a public protest against a horrible crime is a constitutionally protected right.
Absolutely.
But many of our other rights have also been sacrificed or curtailed, in response to the health orders regarding the pandemic. So it's like, well, if I can't – not only can I not care for myself and my family by operating my business, I can't go to church, I can't do any of these other activities, and yet somehow we're now being told that, oh, you won't get sick if you go to a protest that we approve of.
That's absolutely right. And I just want to start out by saying I think last time we ended our show on the note that it was a constitutional crisis. And I think we were pretty prescient in that in that prediction, because here we are. We are in the midst of a constitutional crisis. But you are exactly right when it comes to particularly our business owners, our small business owners that we've spoken to. When the governor was out protesting, and like you said, that is every American's right to stand up for what they believe in and to protest, to stand up for what they believe is important. And that's what the governor said, that this is an important issue that I believe that I needed to come out for. Well, what we saw after that was a lot of business owners across the state saying, my welfare and my life's work is also important business. And I want to be out there, standing up for my work. And that's why I think we've had that. It's like Matt said, that was a turning point, because I think a lot of people, were willing to go along with many of these restrictions for the welfare and safety of our state. But as we got farther and farther along, it was less and less clear to a lot of folks what the benefit was. And seeing the governor out in the street protesting was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back.
Well, part of this, I think, is what we've seen is the moving of goalposts.
Yes.
Because
right.
When we originally started, remember, I mean, I know our business, we sent people home and said, hey, work from home, because we could do that. We did that long before there were any mandates to do so, because there were a lot of unknowns. And what Governor Wolf told us was that we need to flatten the curve.
Correct.
So we don't overwhelm our hospitals. That was the original goal, at least as we were all told. And this, 2 weeks we were told, and then renewed 2 weeks after that, we flattened the curve. We did it. We didn't overwhelm our medical capacities to handle this.
We peaked in April 15.
That's right. And yet we've seen Governor Wolf implement his red, yellow, green, and green not meaning go by any stretch of the imagination. And then even recently talking about we may not get out of green, whatever next color we're into, until we have a vaccine, which could, you know, it's most likely many months away, if not years, if ever.
It would be a record if it was 18 months.
Right.
And it's the arrogance. It's the invincible arrogance of this governor as he, you know, hurls down these thunderbolts from on high that all the rest of us are supposed to obey, when at no time does he involve the stakeholders, even to ask them, hey, how would this play out in the real world if I went ahead and did X? That he won't work with the General Assembly. He won't work with the county commissioners or the local government officials, even as he reaches out to partner with states in New York, New Jersey, and New England. It's not even that he doesn't listen. He doesn't even ask. And ultimately, enough is enough. And I think that that's why we find ourselves where we are. So you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Matt Bried from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. We're going to see that the General Assembly has passed this concurrent resolution, and it orders the governor – it says that he shall end the lockdown, but the governor has said, I'm not going to do that. So now what do we do?
Yeah, this is where the legalese of statutes and constitution come into play, and why it's really important that you're precise, because there is some imprecision in some of these laws in the Constitution. But I think it is very clear that when the governor exercises a statutory power, and that being issuing an emergency declaration, that it does not require his signature to rescind that when the General Assembly passes a resolution. Because as you noted, David, it's shall repeal that emergency declaration. The governor is claiming to have extraordinary powers in that he can so-called veto a resolution. This is where this is likely headed to the courts very quickly, going to have to be determined. Does the legislature serve as a check and balance on this governor, or can he in perpetuity issue emergency declarations and rule by edict without the input, as you noted, David, of the General Assembly or of anybody with regard to this? Because the powers that he assumes with this are extraordinary. Spending of monies without the appropriations of the House and the Senate, distribution of federal money, all of these things he could circumvent. And if this is allowed to stand. So we are, as Rebecca said, at a constitutional crisis. Because this would be the unilateral usurpation of powers that are supposed to be shared.
Correct.
And he's not wanting to share right now. He's being a bad little boy.
I mean, to your point, Dave, about not working with stakeholders and not working with the General Assembly, the way the governor is reading the Constitution and the laws related to these to this resolution that was passed, he would never have to work with stakeholders or the General Assembly. He can continue to renew, this disaster declaration every 90 days without ever have to getting the input of the General Assembly, which I don't think was the intent, of the Constitution or the emergency declaration laws. There has to be a check and balance on the power of the executive. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out in court. But I think his position is that he doesn't need to.
Well, and while the court will rule and that is how the law will be interpreted and the law will be followed, there are also political realities. That being, as Matt, you noted, with the increasing degree of defection of legislators of the governor's party in these various efforts to rein in the governor and his autocratic rule, that clearly public opinion has moved hard against the governor, whereas in the early weeks when there's so much unknown, everybody was willing to put a high degree of trust in the governor and his team that, of course, you know, that the public health and safety is in question. Of course, we're going to give our elected executive the chance to do the right thing. We trust him. We believe him. I don't think people believe that anymore.
Well, I think that was – we were told to trust the science, that we're being driven by data. It's become clear that the science we're talking about here isn't medical science. It's become political science. And unfortunately, we're seeing that the metrics that he had laid out, he didn't know where they came from or why they were implemented.
I have to repeat for the listeners, if you didn't see it, do a Google search, look it up, that at one of these press conferences recently where they finally let reporters attend, that the governor was asked about the so-called scientific standard he put in place as to the rate of new infections.
50 per 100,000.
He was asked directly, how did you come up with 50 per 100,000? And he said, well, we needed a number.
Yeah, I don't know.
He said it could have been 53.
Yeah.
You just pulled it out of a hat. You just pulled it out of thin air, and that was the standard by which you lock down the Commonwealth, our people, and our lives. I mean, the invincible arrogance of this governor.
I think you also saw it just recently in the question he was asked about whether masks were required or not, whether it was required by law to wear masks. And he answered it two different ways on two different occasions, and there's a lot of confusion out there. You know, our small businesses don't know, am I going to get penalized if I don't require masks in the business, or am I not? And if I don't require masks, am I going to be liable if somebody, you know, gets the disease in my, you know, they allege that they got it in my store or in my shop? There's so much confusion and disconsternation over what the requirements are and how to stay safe. Nothing has been clear.
People need clear guidance, and then that guidance needs to be permanent. When you keep moving the goalposts, it's like in the early days, no, don't buy masks because you don't need them. Oh, by the way, everybody needs masks. Oh, and by the way, no, you don't really need the mask. It's like just pick one.
It's
got to
be permanent.
Pick one and stick to it.
Right,
just
but
say,
also,
this is the right thing. This is – or at least openly say, hey, this was our best knowledge at the time. Mm-hmm. We were wrong. This is now what we believe. But just to go back and forth like a weather vane, it's just infuriating.
But here's the challenge even with that is that – this just demonstrates a complete distrust of Pennsylvanians to be able to make decisions for themselves. Because what we're seeing is a one-size-fits-all approach. What works or needs to work in Philadelphia is not the same that needs to work in Brockway. Pennsylvania is as diverse as this nation is. And so this is where these decisions really need to be devolved down at a minimum to the county level, if not down to the local levels. And at the end of the day, we have to trust that employers are going to want to take care of their employees and their customers. And we know they are, because that's the only way that they make money. If people are not comfortable coming into your place of business without a mask, they won't show up. And it's every business has the ability to say, you know what, to come in my business, you need to wear shoes. You need to wear shirts. And if they say, we're going to require you to wear masks, that's within the purview of that private operator to decide that. But they should also say, you know what? You don't have to wear shoes or a shirt or a mask in our place of business. That ultimately has to be left down to free people making decisions about their livelihoods based on, here's the best input, right? I mean, they do these things because they want their customers, their employees to be safe. And it's that underlying level of distrust of people, of capitalists, of people to be able to do this in a responsible manner. And I think we're seeing that level of distrust come from Tom Wolf and his allies that want to have the heavy thumbs of government on everyone longer than is necessary.
And that they don't ever want to be accountable for the mistakes that they have made.
That's right.
It was astonishing to, when the Secretary of Health was questioned about the, you know, the disposition of the secretary's mother, that the secretary's mother was moved out of a long-term care facility even as the Department of Health was requiring long-term care facilities to readmit people who had had the coronavirus. Like, you know, it's good enough. It's good enough for you. It just doesn't happen to be good enough for me.
Yeah.
Well, she had the choice. I mean, this is to the point of choice and the devolution of choices from the executive down to decision makers that should have those choices. Her mother made that choice, and she made that, helped her mother make that choice. Folks out there are not, don't have the ability to make that choice. And in that circumstance, the people who could have made the choice to move their parents out of long-term care facilities didn't have the information that she had. So I think that comes back to the point of be clear about the information and be consistent and communicate that to the decision makers, because given the information they have, they will do the best they can and make the best decisions they can with that information. And it's just frustrating during this crisis. I feel like you said, the goalposts are moving. We never had clear information. And we're suffering the impact of consolidated executive decision making right now that just didn't work. It didn't work for everyone. And we really have to rethink how this is handled in the future.
Well, and we're going to have to rethink it quick because we don't know if COVID comes back in the fall. And
right.
So we better learn from these mistakes quickly, because otherwise we're going to be dealing with this once again very soon.
Well, amen to all that. And as Rebecca correctly noted as to our stand on last week's show, you guys are listening to the right program because we are on the wavelength here of what's happening in Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, this is all the time that we have. Please come be back with us next time. And until then, Matt, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and what you do?
Yes, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com or facebook.com/Commonwealth Partners.
Outstanding. And Rebecca, where can people find you to learn more about NFIB?
We're at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So for Matt and Rebecca and myself, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. On August 7, 1974, Pennsylvania's senior U.S. Senator Hugh Scott, along with Senator Barry Goldwater of Arizona and John Rhodes, then the House of Representatives Minority Leader, sat down in the Oval Office and informed President Richard M. Nixon that his support in Congress had collapsed and that if he did not resign, he would be impeached. Nixon resigned the presidency the next day. It is rare that there is a specific day and place which can be pointed to as the end of an elected official's relevancy. Governor Tom Wolf had his Richard Nixon moment on Wednesday, June 3rd, when he took what he described as a, quote, real gamble, and walked with protesters through the streets of Harrisburg. The real gamble had nothing to do with the governor taking his chances of getting COVID-19. Rather, the real gamble was with what was left of his credibility. It is a gamble he lost. For months, Governor Wolf and his embattled Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine, have been lecturing, hectoring, and even punishing Pennsylvanians, demanding social distancing and forcing the closure of schools, churches, and businesses. They devised a childish red, yellow, and green system to define the extent of their draconian shutdown orders, supposedly to stem the spread of the coronavirus. When county commissioners and lawmakers in a number of counties threatened to move forward into the next phase of reopening without his permission, Wolf threw a temper tantrum, calling them, among other things, quitters. He said they were engaged in a, quote, cowardly act, and then bludgeoned them by threatening to withhold federal stimulus funding. When a Cumberland County barber and a York County diner decided they had enough of his business closure order and decided to reopen, Wolf dispatched his deep state bureaucrats to suspend their licenses and issue fines. He was determined to stomp out anyone who dared to defy him. Again, Wolf chided those opposing him for being selfish and suggested they would contribute to the spread of the coronavirus. When the state legislature expressed the will of the people by repeatedly passing bills designed to reopen various segments of the state's economy. Wolf obliterated what few checks and balances remain by vetoing each bill. The governor made it plain that only he and his health secretary would decide what would open and when. When citizens from throughout the Commonwealth rallied on the steps of the state capitol, demanding the governor reopen businesses and put Pennsylvanians back to work, Wolf and Levine used their hand sanitizer, took to their isolated podium, and told them it was unsafe to protest. Heck, it wasn't even safe to get a haircut without being lectured by the governor, something Steeler quarterback Ben Roethlisberger learned the hard way. It was clear. Tom Wolf would simply not tolerate anyone defying what he and Rachel Levine had decided what was best for we, the people of Penn's Woods. Break the rules, and you would be in for a tongue-lashing or worse. The governor believed that he, and he alone, held the high ground. If he ever did hold the high ground, he lost it on that sunny June afternoon. He lost it when he climbed out of his state police-guarded SUV, not the old Jeep used for political imaging purposes, but a state police-guarded SUV to participate in a protest. The governor, who said protests were unsafe, marched in a protest. The governor, who told us to social distance, did not social distance. The governor, who told us more than 25 people could not gather together, joined a crowd of hundreds. The governor broke all of the rules. He said he took a gamble because the cause was important to him, and he was willing to take that gamble. For many Pennsylvanians, opening their business is important to them and are willing to take that gamble. Many Pennsylvanians would like to go eat at a restaurant and are willing to take that gamble. Many Pennsylvanians would like to safely get on with their lives and are willing to take that gamble. Tom Wolf's assumption of near dictatorial powers has always been legally and constitutionally questionable. Whatever moral authority he may have had vanished with his hypocritical stroll through the streets of Harrisburg, and along with it, the relevancy of his governorship. It is time for Rachel Levine to put away her red, yellow, and green flashcards. It is time to end excessive state government interference in our lives. It is time to reopen Pennsylvania. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGGY and WGGI-FM in Pittston, along with WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.